WMFO Medford, and good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to The Voicemobile. I'm your host, Joyce the Voice. Happy to be with you. When I just remembered, I have a special announcement that I need to make. Let me see if I can pull it up here on my phone. Let's see. I made it last week, and let's see now. I should have pulled this up. So, okay. Here we go. This should be it. Now I've lost this. These headphones drive me crazy. Okay. So, here we go. This is the announcement. On December 1st, 2021, trustees of Tufts College, licensee of WMFO 91.5 FM, Tufts Freeform Radio, filed an application with the Federal Communications Commission for renewal of its license. Members of the public wishing to view this application or obtain information about how to file comments and petitions on the application can visit publicfiles.fcc.gov and search in WMFO public file. So that's good. Okay, I'll let them know that that was done. Also, we have a special guest coming on, a woman named Melissa L. Cook, an author. She has written a book called The Call of the Last Frontier, the true story of a woman's 20-year Alaska adventure. It's a fascinating story and well-written, and we'll be having one of hopefully several conversations. Her book is quite packed with a lot of information. She lived in a couple of different locations, all remote, what we call bush country. I lived in Alaska from 70 to 73, but I didn't live in the bush. I lived in Anchorage. So we'll be talking about her experiences and a little bit of mine. And so hopefully she'll be joining me remotely at around 3:30. So if you've ever wondered what it's like to live out there in the bush, or if you have friends who might be interested, have them tune in to WMFO.org or 91.5 FM here at Tufts University. The other thing is that we have a Jewish celebration coming up on Sunday night, Tisha B'Av, Tu B'Shvat. I'm getting myself mixed up. Tu B'Shvat, which is the Hebrew way of saying the date in Shvat, which is the month. And this is the new year of the trees, so I'll be talking more about that. All right, we'll get us started off with some wonderful music from composer and performer, flautist Steve Gorn. Thank you. Well, the incredible Steve Gorn on that sorry flute. That's from his CD called Colors of the Mind on the Dharma Moon label, and the song is called Indian Nights. You're listening to WMFO Medford here at Tufts University. This is The Voice Mobile. I'm your host, Joyce The Voice. Happy to be here with you. Now, in a little bit, at 3:30, I'm going to be joined, hopefully, by phone by Melissa L. Cook, who has written a book about her 20-year Alaskan adventures, the true story of a woman's adventures, The Call of the Last Frontier. So we'll be having a conversation with Melissa. We spoke a little bit earlier this week by phone, so it was very exciting. I lived in Alaska from 70 to 73, and that was before she and her husband and their children went up there. So, okay. This is something very dangerous in your home. It could be hiding in a closet or waiting in the basement. It's not sharp or toxic or flammable, yet it helps send more people to the trauma center than any other household item. Who knew? Using a ladder might seem easy. Misusing one is even easier. Ask any of the 150,000 people who fell off their ladders into the trauma center last year alone. Don't let a do-it-yourself project do yourself in. For tips on ladder safety, visit orthoinfo.org/ladder safety. A public service message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons and your safety-minded friends here at WMFO in Medford, Tufts Community Radio. All right, we'll go to a little bit more music.
Is there a meadow in the mist where someone's waiting to be kissed? Skylark, have you seen a valley green with spring where my heart can go a journey? The shadows and the rain to a blossom covered land. See you. them anywhere. Won't you lead me
Okay, I'm just waiting for Melissa. The call came in, but I didn't get it on the board, so we'll try again. I'll put some music on, Girl from the North Country.
If you're traveling in the North Country fire, where the winds hit heavy on the borderline, remember me to one who lives there. For she once was a true love of mine. If you go when the snowflakes storm, when the rivers freeze and summer ends, please see she has a coat so warm to keep her from the howling winds.
Microphone and put you up on the air. Let's see if this works.
Please see if her hair hangs long, if it rolls and flows all down her breast. Please see for me if her hair's hanging long, for that's the way I remember her best. I'm wondering if she remembers me at all. Many times I've often prayed in the darkness of my night, in the brightness of my day. Where the winds hit heavy on the borderline, remember me to one who lives there. She once was a true love of mine.
Mr. Bob Dylan. And Melissa, you're there?
I am.
Oh, thank goodness. Great. I love technology when it works. I don't know why it didn't work the first time, but we've got it, so yay. Oh, my gosh. How is your day going today?
Oh, it's going great. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. It's very... It's very exciting. It's so fun how, you know, I tell my listeners how we connected up. On Facebook, there was a special site for pictures and the images of the Northern Lights and pictures of Alaska. So I, you know, started to receive those. And I think I responded to one of them. And then I think you responded to me.
Yes, well, I have posted on one of the pictures, and I noticed that you responded too, and I asked you why you go by Joyce the Voice.
Ah, there it is.
And you said, because I host the radio show.
There, yeah, yeah. So actually, there's more to that story, but that's for another time. So I had the name before I ever did radio, actually, so... It has more to do with, you know, how I present myself to the world through voice. So then, yeah, I think we started to communicate, and you told me that you had written this book.
Right. I asked you if you ever interview authors, and you said you did. And so I sent you a copy of my latest book, The Call of the Last Frontier, and you read it.
I did. Thank you. I found it really hard to put it down. It's a very thick book. Let me see. It's about, including a little over 300 pages. Some of them are wonderful photographs that you took. And the very first photograph was a picture of you and your husband at the Captain Cook Hotel during one of the search that the Alaskan school boards are looking for teachers. And
yes, the Alaska Teacher Placement.
Right,
hold a
right.
job fair every year in
right.
Anchorage.
So I actually worked at the Captain Cook Hotel as a front desk person. And that was a very interesting... Walter Cronkite came to the hotel one time. He was one of the more famous people that I waited on. I was surprised how short in stature he was, because when you see him on TV, he was, it seemed like he was a very tall person, but very, very nice. So, yeah, I was there for, I don't even remember how long, but that was...
The hotel was very, it was a fine hotel.
Yeah, it was like a 5-star. Yeah.
Right. We came from Wyoming. We stayed in the hotel. It was expensive, but we wanted to be right there for the job fair.
Right,
and we
right.
were blown away when we came in and there were bellhops there in Alaska.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a funny thing. People think that it's just like a little backwater. I worked, among other jobs that I had, I worked for the opera company. They had their own opera company, and they made all of the sets. You couldn't really ship things up from the lower 48. They had all the costumes. I worked for the costume mistress. I was one of her assistants. And so, people were very surprised to discover that it was a bit more cosmopolitan than people could think.
Well, and about half the people in the state live in Anchorage.
That's right.
But the rest of us live remote, most of us. There's a few people in Fairbanks and Juneau, but most of the rest of the state's remote, and that's where I live, remote areas. And we didn't have an opera.
Of course not.
We didn't even have a restaurant.
Right. So your first posting, and actually the process was a bit of a crazy thing, but your first posting was where? Let's tell people where.
Oh, you mean where I first taught?
Yes.
The first place that I taught was in a little village called Nelson Lagoon.
Right, Nelson
that
Lagoon.
That if you go down the Alaska Peninsula and you get to the very tip, there's a spit there.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived at the tip of the spit in a little tiny fishing village that until 1960 the natives only went there to fish in the summer, and they didn't stay year round. They just fished in the summer and then they built some houses and stayed. And there's a reason they didn't stay year round.
Yeah.
It is nasty weather.
Right. So yeah. we've had here yesterday it was very bitter cold. It was like down to wind chill 14 in some places. So it was like...
Wow, that is cold.
It was very cold, yeah. No precipitation, but just that... And the wind, that's why you had the wind chill down like that. Today, it warmed up to 26, or I think, I don't know, but still there's a wind. So you have to bundle up. I mean, it's just...
Right.
And surprisingly, where you were, you didn't get to see the Northern Lights. People think Northern Lights anywhere above the circumpolar north, but no, where you were, the conditions weren't appropriate for that, which is, that surprised me.
Well, when you think about it, Alaska stands the size of the United States. It's not the whole size because it has the Aleutian Chain.
Right.
But it's huge.
Right.
And
people
so
don't
one
realize.
Of the things that people... Right. So when you talk about Alaska, think about the United States.
You're talking about all these different
Florida
areas.
North Dakota.
Right.
And there's a big difference. And so we lived in the Aleutians, which would have been the milder temperatures. We never got really, really cold. I mean, it went below freezing, but it didn't get really cold. But the winds were incredible.
Yeah.
The winds would blow 100 miles an hour. And the pilots would fly.
Right.
I mean, it was still blowing 55, 65 miles an hour and gusting.
It's
crazy. I know, because I flew with them.
Right. Trying to land planes with those crosswinds, as you described very vividly.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. One of my friends, I think I may have told you this, she became a bush pilot. And, you know, that's the taxi service if you want to get
right.
around. And people in the lower 48
right.
can't wrap their brain around that. There aren't so many roads.
Well,
and some places are absolutely not accessible except by bush plane or by, you know, a larger plane. So
mm-hmm.
much depends.
About 80% of the towns are not accessible except by boat or plane, and I lived in both, you know, both places that I lived, it was only boat or plane. In fact, Nelson Lagoon was only plane.
Only plane.
Because even though they had boats, it wasn't, the Bering Sea is not a place you just go and travel along. They
right.
would go and fish in the lagoon, but they didn't take those boats out and sail up to another town.
Right.
They brought their boats in on a barge.
Right. Yeah. So
mm-hmm.
my then partner was working as a lineman for the electrical union. So he would be doing wiring up in the Aleutian and way out there
mm-hmm.
and would be gone for like 2 weeks at a time. It was harrowing. He got good pay, but it was,
mm-hmm.
I mean, he had to suit up in a very thick, you know, bottom to top, like a jumper. And heavy
right.
gloves, and yeah, so he earned every bit of his money. So tell me, when you first came up, so you landed at the Captain Hook Hotel, and it took a while
uh-huh.
till you could connect up with a job.
Right. Well, when we landed and we went to the Captain Cook Hotel, we didn't realize that there would be so many people there.
Right.
When we got into that hotel, it was loaded with people, and they had 50 jobs for 1,000 candidates.
Yeah,
and
it's
the second job fair we went to had 1,500 candidates for 50 jobs.
Like a meat market,
and we
really.
We needed two in the same place.
Right.
Yes,
right.
I called it the meat market.
Right.
It felt like a meat market.
and you know, they were vying for different candidates, and it wasn't so simple. It was kind of harrowing.
It was, because when the administrators get there, it's two-sided. So the teachers go in and they're looking for a job, but the administrators are looking for teachers who are going to cut it.
Right.
One of the problems that Bush Alaska has, and that's pretty much who's at the job fair. If you go to the job fair, don't expect Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau to be there.
Right.
You might have a representative, but you're not going to interview and get a job there
right.
in those towns. They have their own way. So the job fair is for the Bush communities.
I see.
And it is detrimental to towns and school districts when teachers come up and then they leave. So they can scope out the room and get a pretty good idea who's going to cut it, who's not. You don't always know, because you do have people who leave and you think you got somebody who'll cut it, but you can tell sometimes right away.
So
one of the problems that happens is you hire somebody and then they get out to the bush and they don't get off the plane. So one of the very first things that happened to us at the job fair, we went to a presentation and the man got out a white piece of paper and he took out a black marker and he put a dot in the middle of the paper, and then he held that paper up for the room to see. And he asked us all, "Do you see this?" We all nodded. He said, "Do you see this? This is Point Way and Point Hope. You've been there. You know what it looks like. It's a little tiny town and nothing else but snow." He said, "So if you take a job with us, you get off that plane, because you knew it. You knew it when you took the job that that's where you were going." And when we landed in Nelson Lagoon, I remembered that man holding up that paper, because I didn't want to get off the plane. And I wasn't surrounded by snow, and it wasn't white, but I sure as heck was surrounded by water.
Yeah.
And it was a little tiny village of 30 people, and it was scary to get off that plane.
Very
scary. If I had more than 2 cents in my pocket, I would not have gotten off.
Well,
but I didn't.
Okay, so the reason
we had to get there.
The reason that all these people show up is because there's a very good pension system.
At that time, it was a pension, and Alaska was known for their high salaries. And when we got there, they had dropped the salaries just a year or two before, and we didn't know that. But it was still good salary. It was still twice what we were making in Wyoming. And we, by the time we left, the salaries were actually better in Wyoming than they were in Alaska. Uh-huh. As a principal, which is what my education was in, I could have brought home $20,000 or $30,000 more to have been a principal in Wyoming than in Alaska.
Uh-huh.
But the retirement plan gave, at that time, and it's not true today, but at that time it was 20 years, and then you could retire, and 25 you retired with medical.
Wow. So yeah, that's significant.
Years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So you finally, you land a job. It wasn't an easy thing, but you land a job and you get there and it's like terrifying, mm-hmm. because it's all surrounded by water. Describe a little
right.
bit your first night and day.
Okay. So before I do, I'm going to tell you on the 20 years, the reason the state could offer the 20 years is because most people couldn't cut it. They didn't do 20 years. Most people didn't do 5 years.
Right.
Some people didn't make it even a full year. So the state could offer a lucrative retirement, and it worked okay until people started getting satellite TV and Amazon. And once that came out, they cut the retirement because people could hack it out there better than they could before.
Uh-huh, so it wasn't
so. Those things probably changed that.
Mm-hmm.
So our first day and night in Nelson Lagoon, we had promised that we would stay 2 years. Teachers signed contracts 1 year at a time, but we gave a verbal agreement that we would stay 2 years. We would sign a second contract, and we honor our word. And I worried that night that this would be one of my promises that I maybe couldn't keep. I didn't know that I could do 2 years there. It was pretty frightening to be in this little tiny village where there were very few people and so far from anywhere. We were almost an hour flight from the closest town of 90 people.
My gosh.
And they had an old World War II base there, so they could bring a jet in. So the jet would fly in there, and all the little villages along that chain would fly in commuter flights from there.
So
it was a little scary.
So describe the accommodations that you were able to live in.
We were very fortunate. In our first teaching assignment, we were given a newly remodeled it was a duplex, and we had one side of it. It was 2 bedroom. It had outdoor carpeting because everything was black sand there. And even when you leave your shoes at the door, black sand finds its way everywhere. It wasn't large. It probably was under 800 square feet, but it was doable. It was clean and everything was operating. That is not true in most Bush Alaska teaching assignments. The job that we've been offered in addition to this one was in Hooper Bay, and when we called the principal there to check out the story of the superintendent who was trying to hire us, he told us that the housing that we were promised was so wonderful was really an old rundown 2-bedroom trailer that was half buried in the mud and connected to the school, and that the rooms were so small that our 3 children would have to share a bed because there wouldn't be room for more than one.
Wow.
So, yeah, the housing does vary. I had a friend who was put in teacher housing in our third location. We taught in 3 places, Thorne Bay, Alaska. And when we interviewed for that district, we were aware then that housing wasn't all great. And we told the district we would leave if they put us in bad housing. So they gave us the best housing unit, but my friend was put in one of the worst. And she could hear the water running down through the walls because it was a rainforest. She was worried that it would start a fire. And her fears were founded when her place burned down one day during school.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So very mm-hmm. remote and primitive. Not the best accommodations at all. So you had to be not only brave, adventurous, but, I mean, almost... I don't know what it takes to, and we haven't even talked about what you've encountered. Weather is one thing, but there were other aspects mm-hmm. of the loneliness, the isolation,
yes.
and the wildlife.
Right. Well, and the ferry rides.
Uh-huh.
When you get on a ferry and it's storming and the ferry seems like it's a big boat, but it's not a big boat, and it gets tossed around like a toy boat out there in the water sometimes. And I was on the ferry once when we were hitting head on to the waves, which is the way you're supposed to ride on a ferry. But the storm was so ferocious, the boat somehow got turned, and the boat then was going sideways down into the over the crest of the waves, which is not how you do it. And so when we got turned sideways and we hung on the edge of that wave, the ferry actually tilted to a point where we looked down one window and it was all water, and we looked out the other window and it was all sky and storm. And I was in the dining room at the time, and the seats are actually welded to the ship, which is a good thing. Because my seat turned and faced the swell, the bottom of the swell, and I put my feet down on the ground of the deck, and I held on with my feet to keep from being thrown to the side of the boat. But the people who were to my side of me, when they got turned, all the stuff on their tables and around their feet all came raining down on my head. Ugh. So I had backpacks, food trays, food, silverware, plates, everything came crashing over, and we didn't know that we weren't going to go over.
Oh my gosh.
And slip. But we came down, and the boat righted itself once we went over the crest, and then we did it again and again and again until they were able to get the boat turned. And it was dead silent beside the refrigerator raking loose from its anchor to the wall, and the pots and pans and everything that was falling around the boat. But as soon as that boat got righted, people started puking.
Yeah. Oh, my
gosh. Wherever they were.
It's terrible. So,
right.
So then
I went to get on the airplane, and the lady wanded me because I beeped when I went through the TSA checker, and she found a knife in my pocket. And she said, "What are you doing with a knife in your pocket?" Well, it was a butter knife from somebody's tray had fallen into my vest pocket. And I told her, I said, "Well, that must have gotten in there when the ferry went down and everybody almost went down and everybody's stuff rained down on my head." And she didn't even blink. She just let me through. It was okay because she was Alaskan and she knew these things happened. But I will tell you, I never heard of the ferry going on a ride like that before or since, and people still talk about that ferry ride.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
I can hear them when I ride the ferry say, "You know, this ferry almost went down," and I think, "Yeah, I was there."
Oh, gosh. That's just incredible. So, well, we should talk a little bit about the beauty, because that's one of the mm-hmm. reasons that people go there, obviously for adventure and for the gorgeous vistas. So what did your particular location look like?
Well, when you think about beauty in Alaska, there are some beautiful places, and if you get on Facebook and some of their blogs, you'll see that.
Yeah.
But not all of Alaska is beautiful.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's beautiful in its own way, but
right.
not beautiful like you think they're going to put a picture on Facebook and show it off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you think about the United States again, pick a state and you'll probably find one that you find more beautiful than somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean that one that isn't as beautiful as somewhere else doesn't have its beauty. It does, but it's not the jaw-dropping.
Right, right.
So we moved out to Nelson Lagoon, and when we were in Homer getting ready to get on the ferry that was broken down, we ended up on a single-engine airplane. We left Homer, and in our mind, we were moving to the great Yellowstone Park of the North.
Mm-hmm.
We really believed that,
uh-huh.
and Homer confirmed that. Homer is the beautiful place you see when you look at pictures online. A beautiful color. It has storms, by the way. It's not always like that.
Right,
but
right.
When it's not just blowing, storming, it's gorgeous. But when we started flying that 3-hour flight down the Alaska Peninsula, the color drained away.
Yeah.
And the beautiful skies closed in, and the beautiful ground turned to water holes with some black sand that looked gray from the sky, and my jaw dropped, and I was saying a few swear words under my breath because
uh-huh.
this wasn't what I was thinking of.
Right, right.
But when we moved to Prince of Wales Island, we did go to the great Yellowstone Park of the North. That was it. And I was never disappointed, not one day, when I got up and I looked out the window. And it didn't matter if it was blowing and storming or not. It was all just beautiful.
So that was...
So it just depends where you go.
Right. That was a couple of years later. You were
yes.
two mm-hmm. years at your first location.
Right, Nelson
and,
Lagoon.
Nelson Lagoon, right. So, and then
we spent 18 years on Prince of Wales.
Mm-hmm. Well, you described in your book is called The Call of the Last Frontier, the true story of a woman's 20-year Alaska adventure. So you describe many different things that happen. And I figured we would just kind of give an overview on this first go-round and get into more detail a little bit later. But is there something of your adventures that, you know, comes to mind that you'd like to share as a seminal Alaskan memory? I have to say, I am my jaw dropped many times during the reading. This is a wonderful, you wrote beautifully, and you told me in our conversation that you had taken, you had written sticky notes and you had sent home emails so that, because you had great recall of a lot of detail, which I found it hard to believe that you'd know how to recall all of that.
Well, there is a secret to it. When I landed there, well, I have to tell you, when I flew out there with a man named George. And when I wrote my story, I wanted to tell George that he was in the book. Mm-hmm. So I called, I spoke to a lady who no longer lives there, but she was our neighbor. And I asked her if she knew who George was, and she didn't. And so I called Homer's Airport. And I said, 25 years ago, you had a pilot flying for you named George. Can I talk to him? They laughed at me. But Alaska being the way Alaska is, Alaskans help other Alaskans always. They just do. And so between the crew there and the people in town that they were able to contact, we found George Nathan.
Wow.
And I talked to George Nathan. And he was one of a few people that I searched for under unrealistic ideas that I'd ever find them, and I found them, and I found him. And I asked him if he remembered flying us out to Nelson Lagoon. I said, I know you probably flew a lot of flights. He was so excited. He said, do you know, in all the years I flew in Homer, I always flew within 15 minutes of Homer to all the little places. That was the only flight he ever got to take that was like that. So yes, he remembered it.
Wow.
And I said, do you remember when we were coming up on Nelson Lagoon, and you hollered out, Nelson Lagoon up ahead. And I screamed from the back of the plane, where? Because I couldn't see it. There was water everywhere and mountains far off in the distance. What do you mean, Nelson Lagoon up ahead? Where do you mean you're going to land?
Unbelievable.
Where? And he tipped the plane so that we could look out the windows, and there was a little tiny sand spit. So if you put your hand up in front of your face and extend your thumb, we were at the tip of the thumb, and that sand spit ranged from 50 to 100 yards wide.
Wow.
And in the most narrow spots, that 50 was actually pretty low elevation, so when the high tide came in, the spit became an island.
Oh my gosh.
And so I saw this sandy spit, or if you get on Google Earth and you type in Nelson Lagoon, you'll see what I'm talking about. It's just this little sand spit out in the ocean, and we were going to land on it.
Also,
so,
you
yeah,
should
that's
tell
that's one of those memories.
You should tell people the location where they can see the pictures that you've taken, the color pictures, which are black and white.
You can find the color. Yeah, so the color pictures for my book are on my author page, and my name is Melissa Cook, and my page is melissacook.us for United States, and my name is spelled normally, MelissaCook.us. And if you go to my website, you'll see the blurb for the book, the cover, you'll see the links to the gallery, and you'll also see links to be able to order a book or order an autographed book. The book is available in paperback, hardback, ebook, and it will be and large print, and it's also going to be available in audiobook.
Oh, that's terrific. And who's doing
the audiobook is not out yet.
Who's doing the audio? Are you
I am.
You are good. That's terrific. That's terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's...